What is the benefit of running scared? This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, with the thought for today. What is the benefit of running scared? Well, philosophers and psychologists and psychiatrists and medical doctors and human beings and animals and all sorts of critters all know that if you play dead, nobody's going to bother you. Yeah? But what does it mean to play dead? It means to be at peace with yourself. When you're sleeping, you have no idea what's going on around you most of the time, you know. You have no idea what's happening. And I mean, the world could come crumbling down on you, and you wouldn't even know it. And some people say they sleep very light, and they would know it. But when they're in their normal sleep, when they don't know it, they don't know it. Because we all have a normal sleep. Because no person exists who can not sleep at some point during a day, you know, and really sleep soundly and unaware of what's going on around them. Now, this is a very beautiful thing. It's a very beautiful thing to be unaware of what's going on around you. Because the capacity that we have to be unaware of what's going on around us and be undisturbed by what's going on around us is very, very beautiful, very special. Because in that capacity, whatever happens is this. In that capacity, we are at peace. We are peace itself. We are completely oblivious to anything in the world. We are. It's invisible to us, anything that's going on in the world. The Discovery magazine has a number of articles in it this month, and or whatever month it is, the current month, and it tells all about the invisible universe and how the invisible universe has so much in it that we don't really know about. And that the black space of outer space or inner space takes up the majority of the space of the universe. You know, the nothingness, the emptiness, the and we should really come to terms with it. Because what does that all mean? What that all means is the majority of anything is nothing. The majority of an atom is nothing. The teensy-weensy little specks in an atom, little specks in an atom that make up its essence, are so tiny that it'd be like if there's three dust spots in a great Grand Central Station or in a great New York, what do you call that place? That's their central station and their ballpark and their auditorium and all sorts of stuff. We came in there on the train.
Union Station.
No, that's
Central Station.
Yeah, it has a name. It has
a
name.
Central.
What? But it has a name not with airplanes, not with trains. It has a name like it's a bowl. It's a bowl. Well, what's the name? It's a bowl. New York Bowl. Grand Central Bowl. It'll come to me later. But and it's the it's a bowl, and it's great, and it is oftentimes used as a reference for what an atom is, and even that is not big enough, because by comparison. It has to say how distant each little essence of an atom is in an atom from each other. And it's amazing. So, again, I'm only saying these things, not that I'm trying to show you I'm so intelligent, which you have come to a conclusion already about. But I'm only saying these things to show you that the nothingness, the emptiness, the actual peace, which pervades most of us, is our most prevalent thing. It is most abundant with us, and we don't really realize it. We think that action is most abundant because that is what we are involved in. And when we are involved in action, we say, wow, go. You know, football game, activities, television, you know, relationships and stuff. And really, in the essence of all, that is the most minor, tiny, tiny, tiny aspect of our being. And we really don't realize it. We really don't comprehend that. And we don't comprehend that because of one simple thing. Because we are conscious only of what we are conscious of. We are not conscious of what we are not conscious of. Well, how about that? Now, and that's true. You are not conscious of the void of the universe. You are not conscious of the emptiness in an atom. You are not conscious of the nothingness. You know, I mean, it's hard to be conscious of nothing. And it's even hard to be conscious of something. Because if you're conscious of something, you have to compare it to nothing. And when you do that, it's a very interesting thing to compare it to. Now, this gets a little spooky when you talk like that. But really, that's what it's all about. And this is why scientists, philosophers, everybody, for years and years and years have said, now is the only acceptable time. Because there is no other time. Can you visualize yourself everywhere at the same time? Well, you are. And are you conscious of you being everywhere at the same time? If you were, you would be mentally unstable. You would not be able to handle such a thing. But you are everywhere at the same moment. You are Jesus Christ, and you are Buddha, and you are George Bush, and you are all these people right now. You are. We are. Because all is one. And all time is here, and all space is here, and all, it's right now. Now, you see, when you start talking like that, then you say, oh, boy, that's way out stuff. That's beyond my awareness. That's true. It's beyond your awareness because you choose to be mentally, emotionally, physically aware. When you're spiritually aware, and that's the ultimate for all of us, of course, when you're spiritually aware, you're not aware that you're aware. Now, that sounds really good too, doesn't it? You're not aware that you are aware. Because the nothingness and the allness and the isness and the ain'tness, all these things are quite real. They're quite real. They exist side by side. And we have created a motion picture here of Earth. We've created a motion picture of our life. And unless it's in motion, we don't think it's anything of value. We look at the still pictures and we say, oh yeah, that was then. We look at the motion pictures, oh, living it right now. It's moving right in front of me. It's alive, you know. And we want to say that it's alive and things like that. But really, what is it? What is it? Each motion picture is a number of still pictures. And how many frames per second are the still pictures? Sylvia, how many frames per second are the still pictures? Any number.
1,000.
She really has it going good, I tell you. You have 1,000 frames per second, and it's swift. Usually it's about anywhere from 10, 20, 60. What is a 60 cycle hertz, huh? No. Don't think about it. Just tell me. A 60 cycle hertz is how the electricity is vibrating through the electrical wires, right? And there's 100 hertz, and there's a 210 volt and 110 volt and all these other things. But you see, this is merely how we are relating to life. Now, really, since there is no time, the hertz or the movement of the space images is, just zoom like that. And then you and I, in our stupidity, we slow it down, so we can comprehend it. And at the moment, we are comprehending it at a very low movement rate. You understand? Very low movement rate. And as we speed up that movement rate, we can become accustomed to it. And then we speed it up and speed it up. It's just like your voice. Your voice is the vibration of your something sound through the air. And it's not really the voice coming through the air, it's a vibration. And your eardrums pick this up and translate this into ideas and symbols and objects and things like that. And so you think that you're hearing words, you think you're hearing sound. And you're really just observing vibrations, because that's all it is. And same with color. What you see is not anything. It's just colors. I mean, it's just vibrations. And these vibrations are going on in your mind. They're going on in your brain. So your brain is a rather fantastic thing. So if these things are going on in your brain, now, we look at Star Trek. And in Star Trek, they have this special little studio. And Anita wants to go and learn all about gardening. And so she goes in this little studio, and she picks up the earphones and puts it on her ears or whatever the thing is, you know, somewhere on her head. And then she presses the button, gardening. But she's got to be careful. Does she want all the gardening in the world, you know, or does she want gardening in New York or gardening from Zurich or gardening of Campbell? What type of gardening do you want? How much? Do you want it all? Do you want it all? You can have it all. You can have it all, and then whenever you need it, you got it, but you already got it. But this is what they shared. You can have a complete college education in 2 seconds, pop, like that. Fantastic. Because it takes those vibrations and puts them into the brain, and the brain translates them as a complete education. Now, you, as you need it or as you choose to use it, it is there for you, and you have the ability to bring it forth out of your brain to utilize it, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, do you think that the greatest scholars of the universe, the most erudite scholars of the world, who are the most deep thinkers, the brilliant geniuses, where's all this knowledge that they come up with? Where does it come from? Well, there are no books that have it in it. There are no courses that have it. It's in them. And now, where is it in them? Is it in their brain? Well, the brain doesn't have the capacity for that. The brain has the capacity only to take information and work with it in a physical sense. The brain doesn't have the capacity to take all the knowledge of the universe and have it within it at one instant and sort through it to its own benefit. The universal mind, which we don't speak about too often, but the universal mind exists. And in the universal mind is everything, past, present, future, now, right now. And you can draw upon that universal mind every time you go into meditation, every time you go into listening to the divine within yourself. But that's the type of thing they're trying to spell out to you in Star Trek, that you could tick, and there you had all that knowledge. Well, you can go tick right now. Right now you can do that and have anything you want, anything that you're mentally capable of apprehending, you know, mentally capable of taking and using. So Ingeborg says, okay, I would like to be a good driver and be alert and aware at all times as a good driver. So Ingeborg goes into the studio, puts down the headset, and it says, a good driver. Now, what does a good driver consist of? One who drives well, one who has good peripheral vision, one who's alert, one who knows the rules of the road, one who, you know, can handle all these things. So Ingeborg puts that on, and she comes out of there. She went in there absolutely unaware of driving, and she comes out of there as the genius driver of the road. You know, alert, aware, fantastic. Now, why? How? It's just a matter of what part of the universal consciousness she chose to be aware of. Now, what part of the universal consciousness do you or I choose to be aware of? And we can be aware of one or many. And we can be aware of it now or in the now that we haven't yet experienced. Now, is there a now that we have not yet experienced?
No.
All time is here. All now is here. All is here. So, does Ingeborg know all the rules of the road, and is she the ideal driver?
Yes.
she is if she says she is. If Ingeborg says to herself, I am not the ideal driver, and I'm not responsible as a driver, then what happens? She is not an ideal driver and not responsible. It's her decision of what of this universal knowledge, this universal wisdom, she is going to utilize and enjoy. Now, what about you? What do you want? And do you want to be the nothingness of the allness? Or do you want to be the somethingness of the allness? Whatever. What do you want to be? What do you want to be? And obviously, you want to be the nothingness a great deal. In fact, you want to be the minuteness of the allness of the isness. You don't want to be the grandness of the isness. Oh, that would be too much. I wouldn't be able to handle it. It would just boggle my mind. No, it wouldn't. It boggled your mind to think about having your mind be boggled. That's what boggles your mind. What upsets your mind is the thought, oh, I wouldn't be able to handle it. How could I ever retain all that knowledge and all that information? And how could I ever utilize it? How could I ever put it to work for me? Well, simply, you put it to work by doing one thing. Whatever you think about, that's what you are. You think about yourself as a great scientist, you're a great scientist. Yeah. And now, do you think that Einstein thinks of himself as a great scientist, or does he think of himself as thinking about the thoughts of relativity, the thoughts of the space-time continuum, the thoughts of how the blanket of space and time moves through the universe? And that's his thought. Now, in my mind, and I am all knowledge and all wisdom and so forth like that, you know. In my mind, I don't think of time as a blanket. I think of time as an is. I don't think of space as here and there. I think of it as here, now. You see, and so I sort of am on another boat from the scientists, but yet the scientists say all time and space are here and now. Now, because they say that in one voice, and then in the next voice they say there is, well, we'll talk about that next Friday. And right away they don't live in what they teach. They don't live in what they project and what they know is true. All time and space are now. And we know philosophy, we know religion, we know the teachings of Jesus, we know the great philosophers of all time, we know what they say, and we know principle, we know how these things function, and yet we use them in an incorrect way. We use them as though we wish they would work, you know? Or we use them as though I'm not worthy. I'm not worthy of having all the good of the universe and having... You see, that's what you think. You think that you're just human. You know, how many human beings go around the world saying, I'm just human, as an excuse for not being divine? You see, when you get to that point in your awareness, and it doesn't have to be a long time, it could be right this second, and, you know, but when you get to the awareness in your consciousness that you are the allness, and you are the isness, and life is just great, and you are whatever you think about. And you think about flowers, you're the flowers. You think about people doing things in the world, and you're those people doing things. You think about the Pope, and you're the Pope, you know? You think about Jesus, and you're Jesus. You think about anything, and you are it, because that's the allness. Now, what things do you want to think about? You want to think about things that are relative? Well, in a relative world, to think about things that are relative is kind of a decent thing to do. But do you want to think about things that are relative, or you want to think about things that are absolute? If you think about things that are absolute, just know one thing. You'll be alone. There'll be nobody else thinking with you. Because in the absolute... Sylvia, in the absolute what?
There is only one.
There is only one. So who else are you going to associate with? Just the one, yourself. You see, this is why talking about absolute and talking about that realm, it's great and beautiful. It's fantastic. But forget about having love affairs, and forget about enjoying a good meal, and forget about the smell of these wonderful things, the fragrances, the perfumes. They are no longer yours. All of them are yours. But you don't delineate them. You don't describe them. You don't separate them. You just enjoy them all. And you don't really enjoy them because there's nothing that you don't enjoy. You are all. Now, these are fun things to think about. And there's things that great philosophers have thought about and great theologians have worked over again and again and again, trying to make sense out of the Bible, trying to make the Bible into a reality that the Bible is just a passing phase. And God is just a passing phase. The allness is just a passing phase. What is real? You. You. You're the only real thing in the universe. And when the day comes that you recognize that you're the only real thing, then there'll be nothing else beside you. What did they say about baby Jesus? There were none other beside him. Remember? He was the best, the ultimate. Now, what are they saying about you? Beatrice ends. Is there anything else beside you? Are you the greatest? All right. Ingeborg, you the greatest? Ellen, you the greatest?
Yes.
Sylvia, are you the greatest?
Yes.
Now, I don't have to ask you. You know it. Right,
yes.
Anita?
Yes.
Rex, are you the greatest? You bet. So, fantastic. Now, remember these things. And stop fighting them. Stop fighting the world about you. Just be one in it, is as it, through it, with it, and have fun. Because being yourself and having fun is the essence of what a human being should be doing. If a human being's not being himself and having fun, then a human being's not being a human being. If being yourself and living in hell is what you think a human being is, well, I don't want to be on your planet. I don't want to be in that human status. And I'm not. I'm not. I'm in the divine human status of being myself and having fun. And I assure you, I am myself, and I do have fun. Have a lovely day, and you be yourself, and you have fun, and know that I love you, I love you, I love you.
Love you.